This is the Kinky Cast, an adult sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. Each week we explore the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. On today's episode we discuss hygiene and sexually transmitted infections. Listener discretion is advised. Here's our hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Hello, Beast. Good to see you again.
Good to be seen, Woody, and you're looking well.
Why, thank you, sir. So what is on our agenda today?
Well, we are going to deal with some rather awkward subjects that people need to be talking about. Cleanliness, health, and STIs, among some other topics.
Well, cleanliness, you must have grooming in there also, huh?
Grooming's in there, yes.
Well, those are important things. You know,
yeah.
In this business that we're in, they're all very important things.
They're all very important, and you'd be surprised at how many people don't take consideration of these matters, particularly when they worry that, well, they aren't getting repeat partners, repeat calls, and when they didn't take care of things that they should be taking care of.
You know, it goes back a while. Since we've been in the lifestyle, that we've learned that cleanliness is the only way to guarantee repeat performances.
It's absolutely the only way. Matter of fact, you could have a performance end prematurely if you are, shall we say, as well groomed and as clean as you should be.
A good old Dutch scrub, huh?
Something like that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're glossing over it, but let's dive down into the details here for a second. Some people say cleanliness is the next thing to godliness. Well, boy, is that true. When two bodies are rubbed together in any kind of play environment or even non-play, just a sexual environment, there is a lot of things that are transferred skin to skin. There is a variety of odors, some of them good, some of them not so good. There are fluids that are being swapped around. With or without barriers, that's up to you. When they are, there's a lot of things that go in with that. And out on the West Coast, a good friend of mine who used to frequent a pro dame, he showed up once and he was not adequately cleaned. And as soon as she smelled certain parts of him, she sent him home immediately and said, never come back in this condition, and gave him a piece of paper with instructions on how to properly clean his back end all the way out.
Oh, poor guy. I hope he was into humiliation because he just got a big dose of it.
He got a real dose of reality on that one.
Well, there is something to be said about showering with your partner beforehand, but that's not always the way these scenarios begin.
Very true.
I think a good shower is called for on your first date, and most time on all dates. Now, some people do get off on the grunge and the smell factor, but I believe that's the minority of people.
But that's part of the negotiation, I believe.
I believe it is, and it's best something you negotiate after your first encounter. Let's set a benchmark there, and then we'll work our way down, so to speak. If your partner enjoys the smells of the sex scene after 3 hours of hot, torrid lovemaking, you might try to be a little bit more relaxed next time and come straight from work to your encounter.
If that is what is expected, then that's fine. Or if that is what is arousing, that's fine. But then there's the other kind where they just say, clean or nothing.
Definitely. I know that I have explored many of a woman that I was wishing for a respirator, shall we say.
Ooh, you're scaring me now.
They scared me.
Beast, you can be scared that way? Wow.
I can be scared that way when it smells like a fish market that hasn't been cleaned in 3 days.
Well, you know, There's other variants on that where the fish market is nice and clean and everything smells nice and fresh there, But just to the south, it is a little stanky.
Well, that is a problem, and a lot of people aren't aware of that problem until I think they start into more recreational sexual activity. And then they start finding out that really you need to be wiping and wiping and wiping and wiping.
And hosing and hosing and hosing.
Well, the Europeans have it right, don't they?
They have had it right for hundreds of years.
And Americans are just slow to adopt the bidet.
I know that people say, what is that fountain in your bathroom? By the way, when I lived in Europe, I had one in my bathroom. And it was wonderful. The Americans would come over and look at it and gawk at it.
But your lovers, I'm sure, were quite happy to have the presence of that device.
I tell you, it's a wonderful thing.
I don't have one in my home. Maybe I need to invest in one.
My bathroom there also had a urinal in it.
That's interesting.
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it?
It's a water-efficient device.
And you just stand up there and you don't splash around either.
Not all men are created equal. Some need to get a little closer to the target than they do.
I think you can ask any woman and they'll say that.
I think so. And I know several of my visits to the public restrooms at a concert have been less than happy experiences.
I will tell you what squicks me. I'm standing at a urinal and there's a bunch of curly hairs in it.
That's frightening.
Oh, it's terrifying.
But curly hairs, I don't know what those are now.
You know, I haven't seen a curly hair in a long time.
Well, one of my partners, a 27-year-old, is growing hers back because one of her other lovers wants the experience of pubic hair. And I must admit, this week when I was with her, it was the experience I hadn't had in 10 years.
Well, as soon as you can braid it, you'll know you're in trouble.
Before it gets braided, I will make a scene where I remove it.
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
No, yes. But the shaving is definitely one way to cut down on the odors also.
Absolutely, because it sticks to the hair.
It clings to the hair. The hair holds the moisture to the body. Mm. Now, you also have to take some extra considerations because you don't have some fabrics will cling to the body closer without the hair and could cause extra perspiration down there, but generally speaking, removing the hair will remove a lot of the odor.
Well, it's also good to wear cotton-based clothing that breathes down there. You don't want to wear a plastic bag, as it were.
No, and I love some of the stuff that Victoria's Secrets and those companies come out with, but they aren't exactly practical.
How true, how true.
When I take a lover, it's nothing sexier than to strip off her jeans and find nothing there. But from a hygienic standpoint, I probably want some kind of layer in between her and her jeans for her health.
Well, hopefully those jeans were fairly fresh recently.
Hopefully, but that's tender tissue being rubbed by some very abrasive material.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Well, yes, and it definitely has its moments, but we're talking about the more proper way to do things.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yes, yes, so we won't digress too much. But cotton's a great fabric.
Let me talk to the guys out there for just a second and say, you get it also. You know, there's no chickening out on the shaving part. You know, just have your date pull out a nice razor and lay you back and have a very nice time getting shaved by your lover. And it's a wonderful thing. I know I swear by it.
I find the experience to be wonderful. None of my multitude of women, as my girls will say, will do that for me. So I have to take care of myself in the shower every morning.
Oh, well, okay. At least you take care of yourself. But I can say that I am spoiled. All of them will.
It is a treat. It is a treat indeed. I have known some men that have waxed down there.
I actually did that once. I went to a waxing class, and we all got to get waxed. And you know, I didn't scream out in pain like some people said I would, but it was a very interesting experience.
I noticed you said you got waxed once.
Well, it's not like I'm going to go down to the local waxing parlor and say, here it is.
Well, there are some parlors that do cater to this, and there is this new threading technique that I understand they're doing the bikini line also, where they take a couple of threads and basically yank out the hairs like they shape the eyebrows with, only they do the bikini line.
Oh, that's a new one for me.
Well, it's a form of torture, I can imagine.
Let's see, what they call it, the epilady. That was a torture device.
It's still around. It's still mm-hmm. around. But waxing, some may go to the extreme of lasering.
Well, you know, that's a pretty extreme and expensive way to do it, but it's a permanent solution.
It's a permanent solution. One of my partners is so blonde, though, that she's not a candidate for the laser.
Interesting.
You have to have darker hair in order for the laser to work upon it.
Yeah. Well, one of my blondes is so blonde I can hardly see it anyway, and when it comes time to shave her, it's like, psh, psh, you're done.
Now, guys, talking about the women shaving you, your woman may appreciate you, if you have steady hands, returning the favor. They have some really interesting folds and to get into.
Oh, I enjoy it. I enjoy doing that. And that's part of foreplay for me.
Yes. Well, it's an intimate bonding act. But let's say one thing. Don't use chemicals.
No. The simplest, very easy way, if there is a lot of hair to remove, just use a
barber clippers. Yeah.
Yeah. The clippers, electric clippers. And then once the bush is down to a size, you take a little bit of soap and a safety razor and just go down and do a cleanup there. Wipe it down with a wet cloth, and you are just absolutely ready for action.
I've actually found that hair conditioner makes a good lubricant for the razor.
I will try that. I also have some shaving gel that I got for my face that I'm thinking about giving a try.
Make sure that you check the menthol.
No, there's no menthol.
Okay.
In this one.
All right.
Yeah, but wait, that would be fun.
Depends on who is the doer and who's the receiver.
I'm the sadist.
So you are the doer.
There you go.
Okay. Menthol could be interesting. So we've covered the hair. We've covered the back end. The back end is something that's highly overlooked. And that's just not the exterior. If you're talking about anal play, we're talking about some internal cleaning. And that'll be another show, I'm quite sure, when we talk about enemas and the do's and the don'ts. But that's a consideration. Then there's the rest of the body, though, to be concerned with.
We're talking about shaving of the pubic range, but there are other parts that need to be addressed also. And ladies, whether you like your underarms shaved or not, that's up to you. I used to go with a woman that had what I would call French style. And she was very proud of that. She said I could shave her privates, but not her armpits.
This was during your stay in Europe, I dare say?
No, this was on the left coast.
On the left coast?
Yeah.
Oh, she was a bit avant-garde indeed, wasn't she?
She was.
Because that's the land of sleek and smooth.
She was proud of her bush.
Well, I'm sure she had something to be proud of. Also, deodorant. Use it.
Please use it.
When you're snuggling under a person's arms, or when you're in some positions that put your armpits in their nose or vice versa, you'll appreciate this.
Those are called compromising positions, I believe.
Compromising positions, yes. Foot odor, similarly.
When it's date night and there's a play session planned, there is a whole ritual of cleaning, you know, taking your shower, shaving, putting on whatever pleases your partner. Now, some of my partners like a nice cologne. Some of them can't take a cologne. And so be specific. It's part of negotiation. Understand if fragrances are on the list or not. Right down to soaps. If you use a body wash, watch the smell that that is carrying. Also, if you put on lotions afterwards, some are scented, some are not. Be real careful with that one. I have to be extremely careful on what I put on my skin with some of my partners.
Well, and also you need to be aware of what goes on the skin in terms of the type of play that you may be doing. If you're doing wax or far play, for example, body lotions are generally to be avoided because they could change the body's reaction to these temperatures.
When I do wax play, and we'll get into a whole show on that at one point, I do an aloe coating before I deposit any wax, which acts as kind of an after sunburn lotion in addition to lubricating so the wax releases easily. And it also then spreads a hot spot so that you don't get a concentrated burn.
Aloe may not be a lotion most people would use for a general cosmetic purpose.
That's very true.
They may be using a high end with high alcohol content or a lot of fragrance or that sits on top of the skin and holds heat to the skin.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of considerations there on what you wear to the party, not only as your wardrobe, but next to your skin.
Let's talk about parties for a second. As the weather gets warmer here and we start to go out to play parties and things like that, especially private events and homes, there are certain expectations that you have when you're in somebody else's house. You're not planning on leaving your fluids around, for instance. And so, you know, go in clean, play clean, use towels. If you know that you're going to make a mess, bring a towel. Take it home with you.
Yes, definitely. It's nothing worse than leaving your fluids on the table is bad, but just as bad for you to be forcing your hosts to handle your dirty towels. It just has disgusting and poor manners.
I had an event here at the house, and I have a hot tub. And so one night they said, hey, everybody in the hot tub. Well, that meant that my towel collection was dragged out, and then I got to launder them the next day.
Oh, thrill, thrill.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them.
Oh, yes.
The nudist community has been following this rule. They carry their towels with them.
Yes.
They don't sit on furniture naked for good reason. Hmm. When you think about it, do you want to sit on that couch after they sit on that couch?
Depends who it is.
No, it really does.
Oh, sorry. I was just being mad.
We will look at some stats that will scare you later.
Well, I exactly agree with that because you don't know where everybody's been and how clean their life has been. And so sharing in a public play space is something that I don't necessarily want to do. I don't want to share somebody else's fluids that I don't know.
Oh, certainly. You don't, and they don't want to share yours, and they may not know what they're sharing. This is a very real case of serious condition now that we're dealing with. But we have several things. So we got breath. Let's talk about that one.
Okay.
Definitely, this is something that we should all already be aware of, but often we don't. When you're going to a play party after dinner, it's not a bad idea to throw a toothbrush discreetly in your bag.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse yourself, have a quick brush, and you're ready to go. I remember with a partner, she had to remind me on her second play that we might want to do that because we was playing after dinner. I was a bit embarrassed, but I appreciated her candor in that.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a toothbrush in your bag or whatever, and guys, go into the bathroom, put a little water in your mouth, slosh it around, just clean it out as best you can, and the old grab a Kleenex, wipe your teeth off. You know, we've been doing it for years, but we got to do it.
We got to do it. And what we're doing here is improving our success rate for repeat performance.
Absolutely.
We want the option of having a repeat instead of being stuck with no callbacks. All right, Woody, we got the bodies, we got the everything, but we talked about those things that people might not know they have.
Oh, you mean a pile of bodies in an orgy?
Pile of bodies in orgies. We go back to the early 70s, late 60s. I missed it, sadly. And everything was free and wild, and nobody thought of any negatives, and for the most part, it all worked well. Well, fast forward to the new millennium, and we have a whole host of bugs and infections and diseases that we need to be concerned with.
Superbugs.
Some have become superbugs. Before the 80s, HIV was totally unknown. Now it's a thought in everybody's mind to sexually active at some point is what is their HIV risk. And while that's one of the most talked about, it's honestly not one of the more common STIs that we have out there.
In fact, it's the second to lowest in the old chain.
Yes, it is. And the only thing that is beneath it is an infection that is more common to drug users.
Hepatitis B.
Hepatitis B, a serious lifelong companion that will modify your total existence.
And eventually kill your liver.
No more liver, no more you.
Those are on the really scary end of the spectrum. And you know, those are what I would call fairly low in numbers, especially in the enlightened period we're in. It's what has turned into be the popular STIs, which are the ones that are a little scary right now.
And the popular STIs are very popular. Half will have an STI in their lifetime, is what the statistics say.
Half of everybody.
Half of everybody.
Wow.
That is not only those of us that have multiple partners, but those of you, not me, that are in committed monogamous relationships.
Maybe with one partner their whole life.
Maybe with one partner your whole life. So what does that say for those of us that are more active?
The risk is high.
The risk is high. There are 19.7 million new STI infections every year in the United States.
Hey, Beast, wait a minute. STI, STD, what's going on here?
Disease. Sounds scary. It is scary. Sounds permanent. Sounds fatal. STI, many of these are infections. Some of them carry serious consequences. Some of them carry relatively minor consequences. So we've changed it to STI, sexually transmitted infections.
A number of them are viruses.
Many of them are viruses, and viruses really are the most common thing that we deal with in our world for most of our illnesses. The common cold is a virus. You catch a cold, you have that same cold with you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next cold you catch, it's a new virus. And as our world has expanded, the number of cold viruses that we're exposed to has increased.
Well, you know, when we were kids, we got chicken pox, and then once that virus is in us, then as adults, we get shingles.
Oh, yes. Herpes.
Zoster.
Zoster. A terrible infection for those who have had it.
And yes, it is herpes.
It is herpes. There are a huge family of herpes.
Mm-hmm.
Herpes of the eye, herpes of the lips, genital herpes. There's just a huge family of this. The common cold is often a version of a herpes virus.
Herpes simplex virus 1, HSV-1, is what you get on your lips when you get an outbreak, what we call a cold sore.
But now it's not limited to your lips. You can't have HSV-1 genitally. It manifests itself a bit differently, but for all intents and purposes, it's HSV. And you can manifest HSV-2 genital on your lips. It's possible.
The oral sex virus.
The oral sex virus, which is growing among our youth with us preaching abstinence. Well, they are abstaining from vaginal intercourse, and the amount of anal intercourse is on the rise, and the amount of oral intercourse is the age is dropping every year of first encounters.
Yes, but they're not having sex.
They're not having sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But by not having sex, they don't consider the importance of prophylactic protection, such as condoms, dental dams, female condoms, and so forth. They don't see the purpose to be in them.
And in some cases, those types of barriers are not adequate.
Those types of barriers are most effective at preventing pregnancy. They are a way to lower STI transmission, but viruses such as HSV2 is notoriously difficult to control using condoms and barrier method.
Typically because the lesions are outside of the vaginal area and penis area.
The lesions are often not covered by the prophylactic device. My own case, I was using a prophylactic device when I acquired HSV2 with a partner who was unaware of her status. And 2 weeks later, I manifested what I thought was HSV2, went to my doctor. My doctor cultured it. It was inconclusive. Cultured it 2 weeks later when I had my second outbreak. Still inconclusive. It was years later when the blood test became readily available that I received a confirmation. But that confirmation is still suspect because of the number of false positives that go with the blood test for HSV2.
It's a notoriously difficult test to get correct results on.
It's notoriously difficult because we have so many herpes simplex viruses roaming around in part. In part, it just is a mysterious virus.
So how many people know that they are infected?
Of all the cases, some of the stats, and they vary widely, remember, HSV2 isn't considered a priority of medicine. We don't pump a lot of money into research. But the cases suggest that anywhere from 75 to 90% of those people with HSV2 are unaware of their status.
So they've never had a breakout or a lesion or anything to give them the tip off that they have something.
If they had an outbreak, their initial outbreak was mild. Their initial outbreak went on detected and unnoticed. This is particularly common in women because their plumbing creates a much more difficult area to examine. Us men, our plumbing's exterior, it's easy to inspect. But women, it's harder to inspect. Also, this is interesting. Less than half of the 18 to 44-year-olds have been tested for any STI.
Less than half.
Less than half. And we said half will have an STI. So we get this situation where we want to feel safe and we want to have negotiations and communication, but this communication really becomes suspect. A person is genuinely believing that they are uninfected, but they may very well not know their true status.
Getting tested, an STI screen at your doctor, is something that I do at least twice a year. And my doctor's hesitant to test me for HSV2 because he says of the number of false positives.
Well, and many doctors are hesitant to have a STI screening done at all. If you do not specifically ask your medical provider for the test, you most likely will not receive the test.
You do have to just lay it out and say, I have multiple partners. I need a test, please.
Well, even if you do not have multiple partners at the current time, given the statistics, given the commonness of these viruses, these infections, it's a good idea to be tested. Some of them can lay dormant for a long time in your system. You may have had a wild spree and had six lovers 25 years ago. You may very well be carrying a virus that you're unaware of today. So still have yourself screened. The health department can do it for a very small fee for certain STIs. They won't test for everything, but it's a small fee. Be aware that some of them require mandatory reporting to the state if you are tested positive for them, but it's still the right thing to do.
I was actually surprised to read that gonorrhea is a reported STI.
Gonorrhea is actually climbing. Its locations where it's found are becoming broader. Gonorrhea used to be a genital infection. Now we're seeing it as an oral infection, which is most problematic. We're also seeing chlamydia. That can be an oral trick. And, of course, we haven't mentioned syphilis at all yet. Syphilis is a relatively uncommon STI, even though it's well known. The number of cases documented every year are not large. But syphilis is a very silent and deadly infection that can lay dormant in your system for years, will be undetectable for years in your system, but can be eating away literally at your brain in its later stages of life. You won't be transmitting the disease any longer, but you'll still be suffering the effects 20, 30 years later if it goes untreated.
Just to give you an idea, the number of STI rates for syphilis is 55,000 a year in the U.S., which sounds kind of like a lot because we don't hear about syphilis very much. If you compare that to HSV2, which is 750,000, then there's a big jump there in the, quote, popularity poll.
Well, yeah, there's 50 million U.S. persons have HSV2 currently. And that grows by 750,000 a year. And projections show that by 2025, up to 40% of the population will test positive for HSV2.
That's a pretty scary number. I'm just going to go be celibate.
No,
oh, it's too late, isn't it?
No. It's too late. But when we hit 40%, how long till it becomes a 60%? The only people that will be safe are people that are not sexually active at some point.
What we're looking at with these numbers, this is a risk that we have decided that we want to take. It is like snowboarding. It is like water skiing. It is like driving your car or walking across the busy street. It is a calculated risk that we have decided that we can take on. If you're going to play in the sexual business, the first thing is get tested. Know what you're all about before you go out with someone else. Then when you're with somebody else, make sure you evaluate them and you ask them to get evaluated. There are some people that I have been with that say, show me your papers. They want to see my health certificate, if you will, that I'm clean.
In California, in the porn industry, it was quite common to have these testing documentations. In middle America, it's less common to find these clinics that will provide this documentation. Your healthcare provider will provide it if you ask for it, but again, you must specifically ask for some kind of documentation. Otherwise, you just get the standard thing, negative, and it's left at that.
It actually shows up in my computer records from my doctor that my test was clean, and so I can print off that page if I had to.
Mine is, my doctor doesn't usually detail my results except if there's an abnormal condition.
Mm-hmm.
But you can ask, and they will be more specific.
So what is the number one on the hit parade virus that's out there that is taking up a huge number? And that number is 14 million new cases every year.
14 million. That's 20 times the HSV2 rate. Men are a common carrier of this infection, but it strikes women with horrible consequences many times. And that's HPV, human papillomavirus. There are some 100 strains of it, some of which are linked to cervical cancer.
And this is the young person's virus.
It's very common among the youth, but it's also very preventable among the youth. For many strains, there are now vaccinations for. If you are below a certain age, you can be vaccinated against many of the more common strains. It's a potential fatal disease for some women. It doesn't often manifest itself with any visible or serious symptoms. It will often go undetected for extended periods of time in the female body.
Well, that has been our once across the STI pattern here.
Well, let me add a common sense approach that a lot of people have forgotten and don't use. After your sexual encounter, urinate. Just a good common sense thing, urination, both males and females, it cuts the infection rate down.
I remember back when I was very young and still a virgin, one of the older friends that I looked up to in his sexual conquests, he says, when you're done, go pee.
It's very good advice. Another advice that we probably need to add, because we did mention bacterial vaginosis. It's a STI that doesn't need a carrier. You create your own infection.
Well, it's actually a fungus.
It's a fungus, and it grows largely when you introduce new bacteria into the system. If you take a new lover, many women will struggle with this when they take a new lover because it introduces new flora to her system. And she'll struggle with the case of this. It's very common to cause this when you do anal play and you transfer to the vaginal canal. It's hot on the video to watch popping from ass to vagina, but it
don't
is,
do it.
Don't do it. They're trained professionals.
That's right.
But this causes a infection, resulting in usually a round of antibiotics, which brings about another issue of yeast. And the male can keep the yeast cycle going.
Yeast.
Yeast can keep this cycle going as they transfer the bacteria, the fungus, from partner to partner. It can also be transferred from the vagina to the mouth, where it manifests itself as thrush.
I've had thrush.
From a sexual encounter?
Yes, I have.
It was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't hardly breathe. It's not nice. By the way, the vaginosis is also related to trich. It's the same bugs.
The same bug that causes trich.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not always require a partner to knowingly be infected, or they can carry them without any knowledge. So we have covered a lot of scary stuff that people just need to be mindful of. They don't need to ruin their sex lives, but realize that these are much more common than we want to admit. 25% of teens will contract an STI each year.
You know, Beast, we're talking about a lot of sexual diseases and things right now, but some people say, but I'm in BDSM to go and play with a partner in a dungeon, and I'm not having sex. The fact is that there is still bare skin being touched. There is still bodily fluids that are being ejected and absorbed. And so just because you're not having sex doesn't mean that you're immune to what we're talking about.
Because you're not having sex means that you have a lower risk, certainly, but your neighbor may be having a sexual encounter that is spreading fluids. The person that used the PlayStation before you may have had an interaction that left various bodily fluids.
And they didn't clean it? Shame on them.
There's this thought process. You clean up after yourself. Let's be honest. Don't depend on somebody else to clean after themselves. You clean before you use.
I clean before and after.
You are a great man, Woody.
You got to do it.
You got to take care of yourself. Clean your station before you use it. And you're sure.
Don't trust that somebody else did the job right. If you're going in and you're playing with your life, with potential infections, error on the side of safety.
Now, most of these infections can be managed. Many of them can be cured. But they definitely will change how you're perceived by others. And they will change your success rate when finding partners. HSV2 has been a very sobering condition for me for the past 20 years.
And you have become an expert on the subject. Because you had to.
I had to. I have to educate new partners constantly and give them data. And many of them choose that the risks are within their tolerance. Some others decide that they will not take the risk. And I can't fault them. It's frustrating, but I can't fault them. Okay, Woody, I think we scared them enough.
In the meantime, we have a caller that has left a message for us. Let's see what's going on here.
Hello, gentlemen. I need some advice. I have a close friend that I've known for many years. He is vanilla, and we are about to become roommates. I think that it's important that he know that I'm kinky before we actually live together. How do I approach the topic with him? How do I come out? Thank you.
Hello.
You're on with Woody and the Beast.
Hi.
So you're out there still in the closet with your roommate, huh?
Yes, I am.
Now, we presume this means platonic roommate. Is that correct?
100% platonic roommate.
Are you at liberty to talk? Is he there?
Actually, no. He left a few minutes ago, so I am perfect to talk.
To give us a little background here, have you told him that you're kinky, or you're just alluding that you're kinky? What's going on?
No, I haven't really told him or alluded to anything with him. I don't really know how to approach the subject. We've known each other for many years, and we've always been pretty good friends, but I know he's quite vanilla, and I've never really known how to bring the topic up.
My question might be, how do you know he's very vanilla?
Mostly just from statements that he's made. And when talk of kinky topics has come up in, you know, group conversation, I've kind of noticed little phrases here and there that kind of alluded to the fact that he may be uncomfortable with it.
I definitely want to go partying with you more often if you're having these kinky conversations. So you think he may be uncomfortable with this notion?
I don't know that he's, like, afraid of it, but I don't think that it is within his comfort zone.
But you're not asking him to participate, correct?
That's correct.
Has he been fairly tolerant and accepting of all of your other variations as a human being?
Oh, absolutely. He's always been very tolerant of me and my slight weirdness. But this is kind of a different avenue.
Well, you're
A lot of Americans are kind of afraid of anything different.
This is true. Americans do have a certain phobia. But 50 Shades in the media has drugged this kicking and screaming out of the closet, so to speak. So I think your conversation will be much easier now than it would have been just a few years ago, even.
Is he somewhat religious that may be causing you to stand off?
I know he has, you know, certain religious beliefs, but I definitely wouldn't say that he, you know, goes to church every Sunday or what have you. He goes out and has a good time and has drinks with friends. And so I don't believe he is overly religious. It's more just, I don't know, I guess I'm kind of in a stage where I'm uncomfortable coming out to other people because I don't know how they're going to react to it.
And I am wondering, are you new to this lifestyle yourself?
Yes, I am.
And what is new?
New is approximately 6 months.
So this is really then a change. If he's known you for a number of years, he knows you as a certain type of person. Now all of a sudden, 6 months ago, you shifted gears.
Yes, he's always known me. Yeah, pretty much you're right. I've never, you know, alluded to any feelings of kinkiness or wants for kinkiness, so this would be a brand new topic for us.
So when you brought this up, as you said, at a party and he dismissed it, is he possibly dismissing it like, well, that was kind of off the wall. Where are you coming from here? Something like that? Or now that you're actually pretty serious about it, you can say, no, really, I do feel that this is my new life.
He never had anything derogatory to say about anything kinky before. It would mostly be just kind of, you know, laugh it off, roll your eyes kind of deal. But I suppose, you know, if it came up in conversation again, that it could be where I could say, no, I am serious. Before, it was more like it would just kind of come up in passing as someone would say something about being kinky, you know, or being tied up or whatever, and he would just kind of roll his eyes and laugh.
I know I certainly have a number of vanilla friends that know that I'm a little different than them. I haven't used the word kinky with them, but they accept the fact that I potentially beat women, which is a little weird. And they've actually gotten a little judgmental on it. One of them is very religious and said, you know, this is not a good thing. But on the same token, our friendship was stronger than that. And so they just managed to hang in with me as a friend and never brought it up again. In a roommate situation where you have to confront them on a daily basis, that may be a little hard to do, is to put it on the side.
In a roommate situation, what is going to be the interface between your kink and his life?
Well, I don't imagine that it will be, you know, very in his face. I don't have a lot of, let's say, gentlemen callers coming around on a regular basis. As it is, I imagine that could change in the future. My roommate does work the later shift, so he would be coming in, you know, a little later at night when possibly anyone that I had here would be gone or leaving. So it wouldn't really be in his face. I wouldn't really be hanging my toys around the house, you know, floggers over the fireplace. I just feel that it would be more beneficial, maybe, that he know going in that, you know, he might come in one night and hear some sounds coming from my room that might make him uncomfortable were the topic not approached beforehand.
I would be more concerned even with this, him not being more than just uncomfortable with the sounds that he breaks in with a baseball bat or hits 911 and then breaks in with a baseball bat. And
yeah,
you have some serious, very difficult conversations.
You got some splaining to do, Lucy.
Splaining to do, Lucy. So definitely a conversation in advance about your love life is in order in any roommate situation where you both are potentially going to have lovers come into the jointly shared space. Presume mm-hmm. that he has some conversations that he probably needs to share with you concerning his possible partners.
What do you know about his love life?
Well, I know that he is recently divorced. I know that he's not really dating anyone right now. He's not really been the type to pick up a girl at the bar and take her home. He's more into, you know, really getting to know someone before there being sexual relations.
The potential is there for this to happen.
Yes, absolutely. There's always a potential.
Well, okay, so if he has the potential to do it and you have the potential to do it, you need to come up with a common set of rules in the event that one of you does it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old sock over the doorknob.
Oh, I thought it was a tie over the doorknob. I got it wrong.
Well, it depends on if you're a college student or if you are later in life.
Ah, I get it.
Definitely some common ground rules about lovers in the space or partners in the space, whether lovers or play partners or what the arrangement is, I think are in order. And this is just a matter of some awkward conversations that will probably be less awkward when they occur than they sound when you are trying to plan them out.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are going to relax and let the conversation flow. Particularly, you say you've known them for more than a few years and you've had other interactions with them. I don't think this conversation is going to be particularly hard. It'll be a little difficult to start, but I think it'll flow.
It's covering ground rules. The two of you have to have some kind of terms of engagement that you can have lovers. Even if that is agreement that neither one of you will have it in the house, that is an agreement. And hopefully it's not going to be as restrictive as that. But you have to lay out something so that he knows that he can have a woman screaming in his room and you can have a guy screaming in yours.
I'm not concerned about, you know, not being allowed to have someone over. It's mostly that I'm concerned with him just flat out freaking out when he hears the sound of me being hit in another room. That's the concern, because I don't want the police to show up. I don't want my play partner or my lover being, you know, taken away in the backseat of a police car. And then me having to explain to a judge and an attorney and all kinds of people that, no, I really asked for it.
I have a question. Is there a local play space that you're a part of, or munches, sure, or groups? Maybe you need to host him at one of the events so he gets to see that this is not such a dark, unseeming situation.
Probably more munch than play space at first.
Probably.
Okay. But, that's a good idea.
That the people involved are more dimensional than just their sex organs or their propensity, seeming propensity for violence.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as a new person, you probably already become aware that this isn't about violence at all.
Exactly. I have. And that's a very good idea. There is a local play space, and there are multiple munches around. So there would definitely be one on any given night that I could go take him to.
Well, that would probably be the best way to get his feet a little bit wet. And even if he says, well, it's not for me, but at least I know what you're doing, then at that point you have some agreement.
Yeah. And a comfort level.
Right. And also, he would know that you have a community around you that is going to look out for your best interests.
Okay. Well, thank you guys very much. That's definitely, I think, a more comfortable avenue than what I was imagining.
Well, there is strength in the numbers, and so let other people help you with this in a public environment, such as the munch, to where we can potentially ply him with some information, make it easier for you. You know, play the Kinky Cast for him, see if he freaks out.
Oh, absolutely.
See if he recognizes you in it, or himself.
If he doesn't, he's got other issues.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
All right. Good luck, caller.
Thank you so much. Right. We appreciate your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, Beast, we've got to the end of another Kinky Cast.
That we have. We've covered some less exciting topics, probably, than some of our previous casts, but these are nonetheless important.
They are. In one of our upcoming Kinky Casts, we have Uncle Abdul of Electrical fame. He wrote the book Juice, and he will be on the Kinky Cast next week and talking about electrical play and edginess and all those wonderful things. And we have many more guests that are lined up coming in the weeks to come. It's going to be exciting springtime around here as soon as we can thaw ourselves out.
Yes, I believe that we got a kinky author coming in and some other faces in the near future. So.
Yes, and we have a femdom lined up from the left coast, and she's going to be talking about her three slaves and how she manages life in a female-dominated household.
I found that most interesting. That's a side I haven't been exposed to in quite a few years.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be. Thank you, Woody.
Thank you, Beast. See you next week.
Have a good one, Max.
Thank you, Beast. You have been listening to episode 4 of the Kinky Cast. We want to hear from you. Email us questions@kinkycast.com or call and leave a voicemail at 916-KINKY69. If you leave a contact number, we will try to reach you to join us on the show. Some listeners want to remain completely anonymous, so we have the Bashful tab on our webpage. Just type your message and hit send. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and Cassie, I'm Max. See you next week.